When you listen to your ambition, you can accomplish amazing things. Whether you're looking to start your career or get ahead in your career, your journey begins at Seneca Polytechnic's Open House on Saturday, April 20th. Join us in person or virtually from 9 a.m. to noon to discover programs, meet Seneca experts, attend live presentations, and explore our campuses. You've got the ambition. Now take the first step. Register at SenecaPolytechnic.ca.
Musa picked that one up late with heavy traffic in front, but no damage done. As here's a puck down the ice, and a foot race forward. Greg going to catch up to it. He's in behind the defense. One hand. He scores! Oh, my! Ridley Greig makes it 4-1 Canada.
I love that goal. It all starts out in the breakout here. Duforth gets the puck on the wall. He's under pressure. You hear the yell. I believe it's Greig to yell. Just throw it into the neutral zone. He does. He wins a foot race, Greig does, and then a little one, kind of cheeky little one-handed shot over top of the stick of the netminder. But I love it. You have to recognize the play coming out of your own zone by Duforth. He's been a force all night, and he's awarded there with a nice assist.
There you see speed, skill, and power all on display on one goal, and Ridley Greig has made it 4-1 Team Canada with 2:44 to go in this second period.
TSN 1200.
Well, nice performance by Team Canada to open up the World Juniors in Edmonton. Welcome to TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. It is Lever Sage in for a vacationing JR, but Sean Simpson in his regular spot and Big Red Cam also here for the vacationing Matt Hamer. 5-2, Canada defeats Latvia last night to get off to a very nice start. I know, Simmer, you were part of the broadcast yourself and Jim Taddy on the pregame show and the postgame show. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Lee. Nice to be on here. A little 6:04 action and ready to rock and roll. Just sipping a coffee, a little water, and we're good to go.
Yeah, so a nice start. And Cam also here with us. Good morning, Cam. Big Red, how are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing all right.
Excellent. So, Simmer, what'd you see last night in a 5-2 victory here for Canada? Ridley Greig, we heard there, had a goal and an assist, and we heard the goal, the 4-1 goal, and it was an absolute beauty.
Yeah, you watch a game like that, Lee, and I think you want instant thoughts and results, and you realize, hey, summertime here, and I thought it took Canada 3 or 4 shifts for each line or each D pairing to kind of get going there, and then I thought after the first 10 minutes, it got better and better. Thought it was a real good second period. Third period, he got into a little penalty trouble. But I think if you're Dave Cameron, Lee, you look at this and say, hey, with all these moving parts, with everybody just coming together, the first game under real fire, I think you had to be really pleased with the way the team ended up playing. I don't think Latvia is that great of a squad, but just overall, a lot of positives to take from it. And I do wonder, Lee, if trying to settle in without much of a crowd and maybe not all the normal hype, if maybe the players were just a tad more relaxed, but nothing but impressed. And in watching a guy like Ridley Greig, he just got better and better as the game went on. And fun to see a guy that plays with so much emotion and so much grit, and at the same time, sure has a sweet set of hands. So that was a real positive for your Sens fans last night. There's a real nice future top six forward for Ottawa.
Well, it was a really nice way to start the tournament. I think the guy with the most eyes on him, of course, is Connor Bedard. It took him 7 minutes to get on the board and say, you know, I thought he made a statement. First goal, Canada, and he didn't look intimidated at all.
No, it's real interesting. To be a good goal scorer, Lee, as you know, you got to be selfish. And one of the things he loves to do is wind up and at any spot with that big long stick. And people love to make comparison. It's funny, they're talking about Joe Sakic and other players. The player he reminds me of as a junior, who was a prolific goal scorer, and this guy's a lot better player, is actually Pat Falloon. And Pat was obviously short and stout, and he's Connor Bedard, a lot better player. But he had that long stick, and he had that quick release, and now he is a real special talent. And you can also see in the little sample size between last year at Christmas time to now, Lee, how much stronger he's gotten, how much better he is. So he's certainly worth the price of admission, and I think if you're the people organizing the tournament, you're hoping he can be a bit of a draw, because certainly crowds have been a discussion, and without a doubt, no surprise, but if you're going to try to build this up from a Canadian perspective, it'll be selling Connor McDavid and possibly selling a final against the United States.
Yeah, you mentioned not a very big crowd there last night. It's Latvia. I get it. It's the summer. There's a lot going on. But were you surprised at how little there were there?
You know, I don't know, Lee. I don't know what I expected in the sense of, no, so I won't say surprised. It sounds funny. Just the feel of it. And I guess it's also because, hey, deep down, we're all kind of looking at the whole Hockey Canada situation. But I'm not even sure, had the story about 2018, all the problems arose, and that it'd be any different. The market has been saturated. You've also, just think about it, when you're in that market, you've come off of a long playoff run from the Edmonton Oilers. National Hockey League, once again, you have a junior tournament, is somewhat watered down. There's no Russia, there's no excitement. So, yeah, I don't know. I just didn't know what to expect. But, hey, like I said, this is a work in progress. You do kind of wonder, would they have been smarter to put it in a place like Regina, certainly where Connor Bedard plays, maybe give it to a couple of other smaller markets as an opportunity, but they had to follow through for the Christmas tournament, and they must have known and expected this well in advance, that these crowds, and as I say, this probably goes back to however the system was set up at Christmas time as far as refunds, where a lot of people just said, hey, we've been there and done that, and time to move on. And I do expect, as we get to Halifax and Moncton, things to be much better in every shape and form for Hockey Canada, but I expect there to be strong support and almost back on track, Lee. That would surprise me at Christmas time. If we get to Christmas time, and you start seeing crowds like that, then wow. But I don't feel that. So a little summer hockey here. And like I said, lots of different factors to weigh in.
Yeah, it's very difficult, I think, to judge a crowd in the middle of August in a tournament that's not supposed to be playing right now. And then you get, you know, Canada and Latvia. And you look at this tournament, and you have handicapped this, you know, more than any, that it really looks like there's four teams, maybe three teams. Yeah, yeah. And other than that, it's, you know, the hockey's maybe just okay at best.
It is. I will say that, because you have to always say in terminology, Lee, and I said that before the show as well, it's good hockey, but by the standards that we're used to of the World Junior, we almost feel like it's a mini National Hockey League. And when you do watch Canada, the United States, and to some extent Finland, well, you see some of that. When you watch some of the other teams, it looks more like relegation hockey, and a part of that is a big building. Part of it is being empty. You put that in a smaller venue, you got tighter shots, you realize, hey, it is better than that. But as far as a visual, yeah, absolutely you feel that. And as far as star power, as you run through some of these other teams, it's just lacking at the end. Even from a Canadian perspective, I found myself yesterday, you know, you're talking in the in-between periods, and I hate to be quickly assessing players that I don't know anything about, right? Like, oh, I really like this defenseman, or I really like
there's
this forward.
Four shifts, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, the obvious are, you know, they'll stand out for me. Now give me a little time here. I'll probably get through to Monday, the first four games, where you start to get a little more familiarity. Easy to judge the goaltender, easy to judge a few of the forwards. Zellweger certainly stood out in the back end. And then after that, just kind of get to know the group a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult to judge. And when you had watching the game, and you're looking at the game and you're trying to watch players, it's 1-1 in the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any worry?
No, and you know what? That's interestingly, and this might also speak to the fact that Latvia, maybe it speaks to the tournament, and you don't feel the sense of buildup. You know, there's times, and I'll even go back to 2014 in the Olympics. Do you remember Latvia playing Canada and how that game was, how boring it was?
Yeah.
How much Canada outplayed them, and I kind of thought, well, this is a bit of a threat, a scare. Not that Latvia's playing well, but they're hanging around, and Carey Price made a couple of saves.
Yep.
I didn't feel that at all last night. I felt like, okay, it's 1-0. They score late, but I just expected Canada to come out in the second period, and they did, and play better, move along. And when it was 4-2, I wouldn't say scared. I was very pleased with Koss and some of the saves he ended up making, but I didn't feel that last night, Lee. I just felt like, hey, this is a bit of work in progress, but very much Canada has this game in control. So, I didn't end up feeling, where there are other games, without a doubt, you're like, oh, man, they're just hanging around, or they're never going to score. There is enough skill from Bedard, from Greg, from McTavish, a few other guys that I feel like, and especially when you get the opportunity to get on some power plays, get some reps out of that, that they're going to be fine. Now, we'll see how Slovakia, it's like climbing the mountain here. I feel like you go Latvia, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Finland, each one of them is a tad better. Now, that's not what we're talking about getting to the summit, but realistically, I guess it'll be to the semifinal, and who will he end up crossing over, play Sweden? You know, we might not see a big, big game from Canada until the gold medal. You know, the Finns are always good, and certainly tactically it's a test, but all of this to me kind of points to a week from Saturday where I'd be shocked, to be honest with you right now, if it doesn't end up being U.S.-Canada.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, you know, kind of feel that way. And I know Latvia is not nearly the skill level that Canada has, but even Latvia playing the night before and Canada just getting going,
yeah,
it felt like it kind of looked like that in the first period where you had a team, like, I don't know if they're nervous, but just kind of get out there and feel what exactly was going on. Latvia, you know, not very good, but they didn't look, they looked like they had played the night before and finally were going.
Yeah, and they also, hey, the kids in the other teams get really excited to play against Canada.
Oh,
it's a real big deal, you know. It's on national TV, and there is a feel for that. People respect Canada from that side, and I totally agree. The first 10 minutes, I won't even say nervously, at the end of the day, it's summer hockey legs.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically like I haven't played, and that's where you're so quick to be like, okay, just relax. And then it was just impressive. The second half of the period, all the flow started to come. It looked a lot better. And then, yeah, you just move along if you're Canada. You know, a few things to kind of clean up or try. But as I said, it's also versus Slovakia tonight. I think you welcome the back-to-back. Take a little breather. Play the Czech Republic Saturday. Play Finland Monday. And then I think you really reassess. I think we all do and kind of figure out, hey, what exactly do you have as a team? And ultimately, how do you match up against the United States?
Yeah, a little bit of a shocker last night. And to be very honest with you, I didn't see the game, the Sweden-Switzerland game, but a 3-2 Sweden victory over Switzerland. Is Switzerland better than we think, or is Sweden not as good?
I think Sweden not as good, Lee, but I didn't end up watching either, so I want to be a little bit careful. But, you know, this is the reality with the Swedish program, like a lot of other ones. If you go to a tournament like this and you have a couple of kids that don't necessarily play or, you know, end up being injured, whatever happens, the talent ends up dropping off quite a bit, not to mention for a lot of kids, depending on their training. You know, a lot of these players are playing for club programs in Sweden where, you know, they're doing the middle of summer training where they're not necessarily, you know, geared up. You know, a lot of European teams are starting their training camp right now, right? If you're in Sweden and then you start, you know, in and around Labor Day for your actual year. So I think some factors there, but, you know, outside of Wallstat, I'm not exactly ready to break it down. So let's save our Swedish Swiss hockey breakdowns. Or, well, you won't be here next week, but I'm not really ready to go out.
Yeah.
But I just felt like it, and again, it's kind of an overview. I always look at Finland tactically, the way they played, and this is just a Swedish group that's come in, you know, fairly anonymously. And hey, we've seen a Swedish team. They still got the victory, Lee. Nobody's been more dominant in the preliminary rounds over the last 5 or 6 years than Sweden.
Yeah. So they get the job done 3-2. Mm-hmm. Canada beats Latvia by a score of 5-2 in Germany over Austria 4-2 yesterday. Back to Ridly Greig here for a second. Goal and an assist. Mm-hmm. And the goal that we heard, Simmer, it was just, I mean, outracing your opponent, getting the breakaway, but mm-hmm. he kind of got tied up in a weird spot mm-hmm. and one-handed the puck.
Yeah.
And when you saw how much he kind of got on the one-handed shot, it was like, man, that's a really nice goal.
Yeah, it really was. And the fun part about watching him, Lee, how many times, and this is an interesting, I'm going to put you on the spot because you probably don't read my Twitter.
Let's go. I don't know.
Who do you think long term will be the better player, McTavish or Ridly Greig?
Wow, that's a good question.
Yeah, and the reason I throw that out there is, and it's not a slight, one of the things with Mason McTavish, and I do like him as a player, but part of what I've seen out of him, and this is where he just kind of got lost in the shuffle as a kid at the Olympics, he's a man-child, and he's a very good hockey player. But I think when you honestly watch them and you see the upside in the scale, McTavish is out of the gate early, very physically mature, Ridly mm-hmm. Greig not as high of a pick. But he walked away from a game like that yesterday. Who's making more of the plays? Who is the better skater? And like I said, they're both going to be really nice top six forwards. What I'm getting down to, it's a compliment to Ridly Greig. Like, you can't watch him and say he's going to be a third-line player. I mean, he's a top six forward in the National Hockey League. He was probably, outside of Bedard, the best player on the ice yesterday. And I just think people, again, this is part of the start of a draft and where you end up. And Mason McTavish is going to be a very nice player in the National Hockey League. But the ceiling between the two, I think, is very, very close.
Well, the point that you make here, I think, is a good one as far as, you know, some guys, you know, just as you said, burst onto the scene like Mason McTavish and Manshaw, bigger and stronger than everybody else. But what I like to see, and not to compare Ridly Gregg and Josh Norris, but I think for Josh Norris's career, one of the things that's impressed me the most is no matter where he's played, at Michigan and then in Belleville and then here in Ottawa, it seems like every year there's this level of progression that he's getting better and better and better. And for Ridly Gregg, I kind of feel the same, where, you know, he got lost in the shuffle and he got suspended and COVID and everything else. But, you know, last year he's the player of the year in the Western Hockey League. He has an unbelievable playoff. It's just every time he's been in bigger moments over the last year, year and a half, you really see exactly what, you know, him getting better day after day after day. And I think it showed last night. And to your point, I don't really know what his ceiling is, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I also feel like there's just a little – I think he actually has more hockey sense than McTavish. Yeah, I think, like I said, McTavish a real nice player, but part of that, I guess, deep down, Lee, I wonder if that's going to catch up with him a little bit. And as I said, it's just funny how people – and already somebody on Twitter, man, because I put that out there, and not that I care on that, but it's like, he's been better at every level. What level? You know, it's junior hockey. I'm assuming if we track their numbers from junior last year, are they not almost identical?
Well, to say that Mason McTavish was way better in junior, Ridly Gregg won the player of the year in the Western Hockey League.
But that's exactly, and people do. Well,
like, again, I don't know how you compare that against somebody else and what they do in junior. Great that he's had Mason McTavish had a good junior career. What is Ridly Gregg supposed to do?
Yeah, no, and also just where he's coming from physically. And one of the other things that I love, and this is back to the Detroit philosophy of drafting Swedish and Scandinavian players, they would draft kind of a smaller player, recognizing that he wouldn't reach his physical peak. Zetterberg being the best example till about 23 or 24.
Right.
You know, when Ridly Gregg got drafted, he isn't Mason McTavish. He doesn't show up to the draft. And I think back to Chad Kilger. I think back to Chris Gratton, different players. And again, not a slight, but, you know, hey, they were physically out of the gate so much quicker. And then some of the other players that weren't quite as physically strong not only caught up to them in National Hockey League, but just went right past them. Yeah. So, like I said, I just think for Sens fans, and maybe it's because there's so many young players, especially at center ice, this is not a player that you're watching that you should be talking about as being a third-line player. And that's also kind of the rationale and reason why, you know, there's every reason for the way it sets up on paper right now that he should start in the American Hockey League and continue to develop, because playing in a bottom six role in the National Hockey League right off the hop, you know he'll bring the energy, you know he'll run around, but I think he could end up stunting some of his growth offensively.
Well, and would Josh Norris not be a good example of how the Sens handled him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's, you know, and every situation can be a little bit different. Part of it's opportunity. A big part of it is even where is Ottawa in their cycle, right? You know, if this happened 3 years ago, like a Shane Pinto, and you're coming out, maybe you give him an opportunity right away. But for where you're sitting now, what you're trying to accomplish, but it also might be a situation where, you know, by Christmas time or by the new year, he finds himself maybe on a wing, you know, depending on circumstance here in Ottawa with a Pinto and a Joseph, which isn't a bad thing at that point. But absolutely, you'd point to Josh Norris and say, hey, that's exactly. And I think to him as well, I appreciate all the physicality, all the other things. But at the American League level, even the NHL level, I know he can stir it up, and there'll be a time, and there'll certainly be a time in a playoff you want that. But I also think you want to make sure that he is playing like he did last night, where he's focusing on the fact that he's a really good hockey player, you know. And then to me, by the time they go to face the United States, I'll be a little shocked if he's not the absolute go-to center iceman for Dave Cameron and his team.
Well, I can't agree with you more about, you know, if you have that edge to you, and sometimes, you know, as young.
When you listen to your ambition, you can accomplish amazing things. Whether you're looking to start your career or get ahead in your career, your journey begins at Seneca Polytechnic's Open House on Saturday, April 20th. Join us in person or virtually from 9 a.m. to noon to discover programs, meet Seneca experts, attend live presentations, and explore our campuses. You've got the ambition. Now take the first step. Register at senecapolytechnic.ca.
Players do, finding where that line is and isn't. Don't worry about that side of your game right now, because it looks like he's got a lot of skill. and to be able to put that into practice, the natural edge, Simmer, if somebody's like that, it'll come. You'll see it in different games. And I think I look forward to him being, I want him to make the team for his sake, but I do want him to be in the American Hockey League, I think, for the development. We know how difficult a league it is to be out of the spotlight a little bit, to get some guidance from Troy Mann and to understand exactly kind of where that line is. Josh Norris did that, went down, and was the rookie of the year in the American Hockey League, and then came up here and had a lot of confidence and was never a third or fourth line player for very long, right? If at all. So you're hoping that other people can go through that same circumstance where, you know, you develop some confidence in the American Hockey League, you're a top guy down there, you're getting top minutes and power play and doing some other things. And then when you get here, yeah, you might have to start on the fourth line or the third line, but you're not considered that sort of a player. And
yeah,
you earn your minutes coming up to get into those roles. But you have to, like, you don't want to peg somebody early as this type of player, as a third-line player or a fourth-line player.
No, well, yeah, and, you know, it is interestingly that you discuss that and it's kind of circumstance, but you're absolutely right. Now, Ottawa's done a very good job with that, but in the case of Ridly Greig, it's also, that's not a guy that's going to come into the National Hockey League and run people over. Where it's interesting, if I looked at a guy like Tyler Boucher, I want him to go back to Ottawa, I want a year in Belleville, but there'll be a time where you realize, you know what, he is a bottom six forward in my estimation. Now, it could change, but if the course continues where I think it's going, you can slide him in to be comfortable to that spot. Where, as you said, Ridly Greig, you need to continue to develop that. They tried that with Colin White. Now, it didn't work out, but it certainly worked out with Norris. It worked out with Batherson. You know, worked out with other players. So, yeah, it's kind of, and as you say, pegging, not the right word, but there are some players where it can be a physical defenseman. You say, okay, he's developed in the American Hockey League. He's not going to be hurt by coming up now and playing that role, just like kind of a role player in your bottom six where, like I said, right now you've got a player right there. And my gosh, I watch a game like that, and if I'm Arizona, I'm talking about Jake Chikrin, and assumption is Ottawa wouldn't like to move him. But realistically, to me, that would be a one-for-one trade right now. I mean, that's how good I think Ridly Greig has an opportunity to be.
Yeah, I think a lot of Sens fans, I would be one of them, kind of going, I don't want to get rid of that guy. I know that you have to give up something something. But I'm just not willing to give up that particular piece.
You would not trade him for Jake Chikrin?
No, I would not. Because I think he could be really special in the league. And they have a lot of prospects.
Yeah.
I would give up a ton of other guys. Mm-hmm. And look, you have to have these discussions. I don't like it when people, you know, and fans do it too. We do it too. Like, oh, I want to trade for Jake Chikrin, but I'm not willing to give up A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Yeah,
and it's like, that. Life doesn't work that way. The NHL doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it was interesting as well, getting some information on Chikrin yesterday, talking to a person close to the situation. Feels like he will be moved by training camp.
Okay.
And what I was told is that Arizona is still very much in the mode of wanting to pick up picks. So from an Ottawa perspective, you wonder for the first round in 2023, you know, what do you look at beyond that? Does that make you nervous to do something like that? I wouldn't be. But we'll see when it ends up coming together. But more importantly, it sounds like Arizona would like to do something before, because you know what would it be like for him showing up in training camp.
Yeah.
And all the media down there, you know, in Arizona, the fans, like, you know, kind of be disruptive with, like, can you imagine the chaos in Phoenix of Jake Chikrin coming back to training camp?
No, I can't.
You know, it would overshadow the Cardinals season. probably Arizona State football, you know, high school football. Like, it might even, you know, the state, this would be the biggest controversy since the Uber story involving the Sens. So, you know, I'm sure that's something they want to avoid.
September. you packed a lot in there.
I know.
I thought that was tremendous. Erik Karlsson traded by the Ottawa Senators to the San Jose Sharks on September the 13th. And that was in 2018. If it wasn't the day before training camp started, it was the day of training camp started.
It was a golf tournament.
It was a golf tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so before.
Yeah,
right?
In a different circumstance here in Ottawa. That's exactly. It's a reverse. It's a Canadian market. You know he's going to be moved along. It was time to do him in the case of Jake Chikrin. But anyways, that, I think, tells you there should be some finality to it. And curiosity as to what Arizona's kind of sitting on, what they're asking for, and obviously nobody has, we're almost into mid-August here, has matched their price.
So would you be nervous giving up first round pick? Like, even if it were other prospects, would you be nervous giving that pick up?
Oh, no, no, no. I think realistically for, well, not really, for Jake Chychrun, absolutely for 2023. Again, this is a team that worst case scenario, not worst case, I don't think they're going to necessarily make the playoffs, but I just don't expect them to be picking in the top 10. A lot would have to go wrong with the team. So,
yeah.
No, I would be comfortable with that. Now, I don't know anything about the draft, Lee. I mean, that is somewhat of a factor to understand. But, no, I'd be comfortable with that for sure. And if it was that, along with a young defenseman, to get a Jake Chychrun, then I think that would be a smart move for Ottawa.
We'll take a break. We'll hear from Ridly Greig and Dave Cameron and some of the other members of Team Canada after the 5-2 win over Latvia. But I do want to ask you, when we come back, if the Senators were to acquire a guy like Jake Chychrun, what the expectations would be as far as the playoffs, not making the playoffs, being in contention. Because it kind of feels to me like if they went out and got a player of that ilk, this team should be contending for a playoff spot. We'll talk a little bit more about that, Cam, with our first look at traffic and the last day of the week. I'm sure you have this in the traffic, Cam. Before the highway closes tomorrow. This is a big, big week. Coming into work tomorrow, coming into work maybe early on a Monday morning. You have to be aware the highway will be closed all weekend long. We'll have our first look at it and come back with more of TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Welcome back to TSN Mornings here on TSN 1200. Lever Sage, Sean Simpson, and Big Red Cam here with you on a Thursday morning. A little Starship getting us back in. Simmer. Is this in your wheelhouse?
Yeah, it actually is. I won't call it cheesy 80s music, but I actually like, I think that was from Mannequin movie?
Mannequin.
Yeah, so no, absolutely. I always enjoy a little Starship action.
That was right in my wheelhouse. That movie played over and over. My stepmother used to love that movie, and just remember listening to Starship a lot as a kid.
Yeah, the Canadian lady that was on Sex and the City was the lead in that movie, right? And that was some of those, the same fellow that was in Weekend and Bernie, and typically, I will not know any of the names, but I can identify with the characters. Yeah.
And that's more than me when it comes to actors and actresses, but
Kim Cattrall was her
Kim
name.
Cattrall. Yes. Very good. So Canada 5-2 over Latvia. They're back at it tonight against Slovakia. Again, 5:30, the pregame simmer, and 6 o'clock. I think, as you said, is this a slow build to just kind of get better and better against some of these teams, because you expect that they will just go and win all of these games, but it's more about how the team is progressing than winning right now?
No. Well, you have to win, Lee, but I think it's sad. But again, I don't think if you're Dave Cameron, you walk out of the game last night thinking, God, we're 15-1, you're dominating. So I'm not nervous against Slovakia, but you recognize Slovakia should be better than Latvia. Then the Czech Republic comes in, Finland. Absolutely progression, but you also want the results. You want to have the proper seating. So a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You want some reps on the power play, probably clean up a little bit on their penalty kill, where they probably need to be a little better on the faceoffs, probably a little more reactive if they lose a faceoff. And then we'll also see what happens to the goaltending. So I think there's moving parts there, Lee, but I also understand what you're getting at, right? But hey, at the end of the day, you'd be disappointed if you didn't go 4-0. Didn't match up properly in the quarterfinals. And ultimately, I don't think you want to face the United States in a semifinal. You want that opportunity to both be the number one seeds and have a collision course for the final.
Well, Dave Cameron, of course, the coach of the Ottawa 67s, is the head coach for the second time at the World Junior team. Here he is after the game about the 5-2 win over Latvia.
Well, I thought we started real well. I thought we started real well with a lot of ozone time. Then our execution got a little bit sloppy, which slowed us down a little bit. But overall, pleased with the game.
Considering the team didn't have much time to get together and create that chemistry, how would you grade their performance here this evening?
I think it went much like we thought it would go. You know, it's early. This is really only our second game. So it was, you knew it was going to come in ebbs and flows. I like the fact that we stuck with and found a way, you know, to get that fifth goal, which was huge, and took a little bit of that pressure off towards the end of the game.
Sebastian Cosa came out of the net, decided maybe he wasn't sure he was going to go, then he decided to go. As a coach, what are you thinking?
That's what keeps you young as a coach, is the emotional roller coaster these young guys do. But, yeah, but, you know, Coach did a real good job tonight, made some key saves, made that save on the shorthanded breakaway when the game was real close. So a fine performance by him.
Goaltending and specialty teams are so huge in a short-term tournament. Two power play goals here today. What would you like to build on in terms of that?
Well, I think the biggest thing in all the components of a game are those special teams. You got to play just a little bit quicker. You know, I thought our thought process was good enough, but the execution slowed us down a bit.
Awesome. Anything else you'd like to add on the game?
No, good to get that first one.
Congrats.
Thank you.
So there is Dave Cameron with Tessa Benham. I love a little Jacques Martin simmer slipping into the vocabulary there.
What do you use?
Tessa Benham. I think a lot of us do it.
Yeah.
Call them specialty teams.
Oh, okay.
I've never heard that before until I started interviewing Jacques Martin, where he called it the specialty team. And I was like, okay. Yeah. But it's really not been called that, right? There's just special teams.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Penalty kill,
I guess
the power
it can
play.
It can be pluralized, I think, right? When you come to both.
I've never heard that before Jacques Martin started using
it. As far as that on the power play, when you talk in that reference, that's as much of when you walk the line, come off the half wall, you're circling down to Bedard, whatever you're looking for, Lee, that's just nothing more than reps. You know what I mean? There's not a hesitation.
Right.
But you also can't speed up the feel. The nuances of the power play, as you know, for the positioning and making sure the momentum of when you're getting the puck and giving the puck is always in a shooting position, right? You don't want to be backing off the net. So to me, that just comes with time. Penalty kill, you'll have to clean up. And as far as Kosa and goal, I just thought he really battled. I didn't feel like he was feeling the puck like incredibly well. Not bad, but I also just thought he kind of willed his way after that 4-2 goal where he just was going to play as hard as he possibly could and found a way. And a couple of them kind of caught into his midsection, but that's okay. You know, it's not easy for a goaltender. And when all of a sudden it's a 1-1 game after the first period, you're a bit nervous. Absolutely. You have a great breakaway save in the second period. It's a 4-2 hockey game. I thought that was a slight deflection off the defender, and I don't know why the broadcast didn't go to the goalie union on that. But anyways, I just appreciated that he battled to bring it home, you know, and that's not easy. There's a lot of, and I also think for the Canadian goaltenders, maybe not the worst thing in the world, Lee, not having sellout crowds. You know, it is a dynamic that having played in a World Junior in another country, I was nervous enough. It's hard to comprehend for these kids now, and a summer turn and a bit different. But as you get to sold-out crowds, two big buildings, to a game like that where you're out playing them, out shooting them, and all of a sudden it's 1-1 after the first period, that could bring a lot of nervous energy for a young athlete, or any athlete for that matter.
Yeah, I can't imagine there'd be more pressure on a position than a goaltender in an environment like that, right? Because, you know, for a player, you can get out there and, you know, get your legs and have that first shift. You can make a mistake. Boy, you let in an early goal in those type of environments, man, that takes a lot to kind of come back from.
Yeah, no, it really does. Like I said, and you build along to the tournament, and you know, certainly not taking Slovakia and the Czech Republic lightly. I hate to say that, but you're a superior hockey team. Now Finland, that's different. You know, all of a sudden there will be a test tactically where they're at. Quarterfinal, maybe not, but certainly semifinal and finally, how you react to that, absolutely. If you get into games where you're thoroughly outplaying somebody, then you understand one more thing goes wrong and we have an upset on our hands. We have an elimination and there's no coming back from that. That's a simple, hey, you're heading home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part for sure. That is an adjustment and a lot of pressure on a goaltender. But I think even more so for sure on the Canadian goaltender, we're hosting the tournament.
So what do you think of Sebastian Cosa in general? Big kid, what, 6'6"?
Mm-hmm.
Was going into last year's draft, it was Cosa and Wallstedt, right? Like, which guy was going to go first? Those were the two guys that were going to be drafted in the first round. There was no goaltender even close. Some people thought Wallstedt. Some people thought Cosa. So what did you think of just the mechanics of his game and where he might be able to get to? Because he's the goalie for Canada. Wallstedt, of course, is the goalie for Sweden in this tournament.
Are you sure that Cosa is a goaltender for Canada?
What's that?
Are you sure Cosa is going to be the starting goaltender for Canada?
What do you mean?
Well, no, I don't know necessarily. Like, I think Garand is going to be the starter. I think he'll play tonight. I don't know that Kosa is pegged to be the number one. Do you?
Well, I think I wait for tournaments to play out.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, what from what I've understood though, Lee, is that they gave Kosa the game yesterday. Garand will play tonight, but as a 20-year-old,
right?
That he's considered to be the number one. So whatever that ends up being, hey, we'll see how it plays.
I always think in tournaments like this,
yeah,
until they get in and until you kind of see exactly how it's playing out and how goaltenders are. Like, yeah. I get guys might be the number one.
Yeah.
Boy, that can change in an awful hurry.
Yeah,
no,
for sure. But as far as Kosa, I like him. But, you know, the thing when I watch Wallstad, he has more athletic ability, and I like his field game a little bit better. Kosa reminds me he's better than Devin Dubnyk, and Devin took a long time to come along. I'm not feeling a wow factor at this point, Lee, but he's a young kid. He's 6'7". It's a long, long haul. You look at the development path of Vasilevskiy, how long it took him to get there. So I respect that. But I have not seen a wow factor, but he's a good young athlete. But I would take Wallstad over him just from the small sample side I've had, Lee. And I got to be careful, too, because I have not sat down and watched both of these guys. You know what I mean? But I'm curious how the tournament goes on that, you know, as you said, who will be? I kind of got the sense, though, that Garand, who's a Rangers pick,
mm-hmm.
and as I say, a little bit older, and, you know, that might end up being, but we'll see. We'll probably know as of Monday night.
Is there a range for you where a goaltender can be too big or too small to be able to do all the things necessary? Like, is there a sweet spot for you?
Well, I don't know if there's a sweet spot, Lee, because I look at every single guy. Now, I've certainly become accustomed to guys being at least 6'2", and I agree when you get that much bigger, but I think all you have to say then is it just takes a little patience. I had Olli Kolze, it took a long time. Look at a guy like Ben Bishop, it took to about mid-20s. So as long as you're willing to be patiently, I don't think you can be too big, but I also look at guys now, and I would say Juuse Saros is certainly the exception,
mm-hmm.
and maybe this is also flavor of the day. If you said, what's the perfect size? I guess I'd look at Shesterkin, but at the same time, what's Vasilevskiy? Is he 6'4", 6'5"? You know, they big guy as well. So, like, to your point, what I'm looking for, though, is just how athletic you are. Just don't give me a big guy, right? I mean, that's going to be a problem down the road. You know, you certainly look at Talbot, 6'4". You look at Forsberg. What is Forsberg, 6'2", 6'3"? You know, these are all good-sized guys. So I'd like it around 6'2", but I'm willing to accept anything. I really appreciate with Juuse Saros is that, hey, that's just real rare that anybody under 6 feet is going to be as good as he is. And you just hope the athleticism stays with him because that's the one part that happens now. You better be one hell of an athlete because the minute that goes, can't teach size.
And the reason that I ask is, you know, some discussions with Kevin Woodley and some different goaltending people who watch on a daily basis that, you know, it's their belief whether you're – I mean, everyone can make it. You just have to understand what your liabilities are and try and make the most of – you know, what it's going to take for you personally to cover up some of the things that might happen to you if you're a smaller goaltender. But when you're a bigger goaltender too, when you go down, the holes are bigger.
Yeah.
And to be able to cover those up properly is not as easy. And just listening to him talk previously, it was like, okay, well, if you're 6'3", you're kind of in that perfect range. And if you're smaller than that, of course you can make it, but there are certain things that you're going to have to do. And then also if you're 6'6", 6'7", there's going to be holes on the other side that you're going to have to fix, and it might take you a while to figure those things out.
Yeah, and to that point, it's an excellent one. I think about Ben Bishop, less is more when you're that big, but it's also, Lee, it's just getting comfortable with your body, right? I mean, that's like any player in any position, but you're right. I mean, hey, lots of different ways to look at it, and certainly respect when you talk about that, and I'm assuming that's in and around the size of a Shesterkin, right? And the neat part about Shesterkin when you play, and again, this goes back to, I care how tall he is, but his ability to make those athletic moves, once he's down, he can open up without being awkward, but he can also close shop pretty quickly, right?
Yes.
You know, when you go back to Dominik Hasek and those types of athletes where they're almost like a gymnast in the net. So to me, that's kind of the perfect world. Where Vasilevskiy, he's an athletic guy, and he's, you know, right now the best. But a lot of that is a massive man. He takes away time and space. He's become very competitive. And I shouldn't say he's a good athlete, but Shesterkin, you just watch him and you recognize, man, this guy is absolutely lights out as far as his reflexes and ability to move around. And, you know, how long can you hold on to that?
Well, that's exactly it. But to your point, when you're a really athletic guy and you're all over the place in the net making these crazy dives and saves. It is your ability, like you said, to cover up those holes very quickly when you're in awkward positions. Because the big guys have a very difficult time in doing that if they get into an awkward spot.
Yeah, and the biggest thing in the National Hockey League, Lee, outside the obvious of being a good shot blocker, getting a position, but it is the person's ability. And that cost a goal yesterday, and as I said, I think it went off the defender. But it is lateral movement that is the trick of the trade if you really want to be on the next level, right? You're going to face that. You're going to face that on the good power plays. You're going to get moving. You're going to, and that to me, that is, you know, that's where you have to kind of sort that out, be good enough at that, that's going to end up taking you next level. Because the majority of goalies on a good team, you know, you're a big guy, and if I can see the puck, I'm going to be able to make the saves. Now, how I control it is certainly a factor, but a lot of it really does come down to the lateral movement that allows you to kind of go next level. And as JR says, you know, stop the stoppables, and once in a while, stop the unstoppables. And that's what the guys like that are able to do.
Yeah, and some of the reason that I bring this up, because you go back to, you know, I think the best prospect in the Senators organization and goal is Mads Søgaard, right? And he's 6'7". And this is a guy that looks like he's still growing into his body and understanding what it takes to be successful night in, night out at that size. Everyone's got to deal with their own either limitations or things in their body that they end up having to, you know, be good at. And it takes a long time. Mads Søgaard is 6'7". And I think I've seen, you know, in some of the times that I've watched him simmer, like, he's just so big in the net, but then sometimes when he does open up, I see those holes and how difficult it is for, you know, an athletic guy to cover up the big holes when you put yourself in those positions.
Yeah,
and it seems like he's got a little bit calmer in the net, which to me is fantastic because then the holes start to go away.
Yeah, and I thought his time in the NHL, you saw exactly that, Lee. I looked like a nervous guy that did not look, you know, super comfortable. And you think back to Ben Bishop. There would be those times here in Ottawa early on where just a simple shot, you'd kind of be like, oh my God, he just opened up. He got uncomfortable, but he figured it out. He ended up catching up athletically. Yeah. Now, what I'll also say for a guy like Kasa, you know, back to, you know, 20 years ago, a 6'7" goaltender, like think about Matt Murray and Matt Murray physically, and, you know, he is a tall, big guy. I don't even think he was on the radar of Hockey Canada because I'm assuming as a junior, he was still figuring it out. Well, early in his career, he wins a couple of Stanley Cups. Now, when you figured out, what has also changed, I was going to say, is that these guys are so far along, though, their previous kind of, you know, group or generation. Like when you look at this, when a guy like Søgaard, I'd normally say Ben Bishop was 25 when he got traded to Ottawa, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that is where it is different. These guys, and even watch Acosta last night, he wouldn't have even been on the World Junior team 20 years ago. You could say he's a high pick, but they'd recognize he's a project, you know what I mean? Where, hey, it has moved along, and the part has changed for the goaltenders. You know, it's no longer just come out and play. There's a lot you can accomplish off the ice to become a better athlete, to get your coordination, to get more, you know, comfortable, you know, with your body, not just be specialized training to be a goaltender. Get out and become a better athlete. You're going to quicken up that process in a hurry to get yourself comfortable with the body, just like any other athlete.
For you, how long do you think it takes goalies to actually figure it out? I mean, we've seen a couple of younger guys come through, but more to your point about, you know, Ben Bishop, you think, I mean, Craig Anderson figured it out when he got here to Ottawa, and he was much later in his career. I think, you know, as guys got on, like when I watched Brian Elliott in the first couple of years, I thought there's no way this guy will ever last. He ends up having a career. It seems like goaltenders really start to figure it out if they're given a chance in their late 20s.
Yeah, you know what, Lee, and that's a part of too. I, you know, there's no doubt that patience can be a really good thing. But I think about Jonathan Quick coming in quickly and winning quickly. I hate that saying, winning Stanley Cups. Then you look at a guy like Rask, who's a great prospect, plays behind Tim Thomas, Vasilevsky. To the point, Lee, I can't measure it. Now, I think you have to be respectful. And I look at now a guy like Forsberg. You look at a guy like Markstrom later in his career. Without a doubt, I would lean on the other side of 25 where you're going to hit your sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the amazing part. Like, did anybody, you were around the Ontario Hockey League.
Yeah.
Did anybody think that Matt Murray was going to come in and win two Stanley Cups before he was 25 years old?
No, of course not.
And wasn't like he was Corey Crawford. And not that I'm taking anything away from Corey Crawford. Like, he was a major factor in them winning. So that's the neat part. You know, you see a guy like Shesterkin come in fairly quickly, you know, imply his trade. You look at a special talent like a Carey Price, 1 year in the American Hockey League, right into the NHL. So, yeah, I'd agree with you, but it is so situational. And I think we also have to agree that, hey, it sure helps depending on what kind of a team you're playing on, how much you're insulated and everything else. Like Spencer Knight, how good he is. How quickly, well, I'm blanking on the goaltender from Boston College that plays for Vancouver, the American. God, I'm bad. It's middle of the summertime.
The place for Thatcher Demko?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he came along pretty quickly, right? Like, you know, so as I said, it really is. Now, what it would be a fun study, Lee, I'm assuming to the point of when you were talking to the goalie coach that anybody under 6'3", I'm going to say, or 6'2", there's a pretty good chance they came along a lot quicker, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those would almost always mm-hmm. be size related, which would be a fun study. So if you're drafting a goaltender over 6'4", let's go with 25. And if you're drafting one under 6'3", let's go with before that. Because as obviously, and like Jonathan Quick coming in, and what would Quick be at, about 6'2", 6'1", max? You know, his athleticism, his coordination was so intact so quickly after playing in college that he came in and was almost an instant superstar.
Yeah, I love the fact when organizations draft goaltenders in the draft and are willing to wait, you know, 3, 4, 5 years before they even think about being a massive factor on your team. We just see so many guys come through, and it's like it takes them a second team, a third team into their late 20s to start to figure it out. Anton Forsberg's another. I mean, he's been all over the place, but I think there's lots of examples of guys that don't figure it out until
You know, Robin Leonard, certainly other issues, Lee. But what I do think is a major mistake is that it's realistically no different for defense. I mean, hey, to realistically push these guys along, you can hide them a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But when was Lassie Thompson drafted? JBD, you know, you start to talk about making an impact. Realistically, it's 5 years after your draft. You find your way in. The idea, well, don't take a goaltender in the first round. Listen, you got a good talent. You got a good athlete. You take them. The forwards, we know, generally will work their way in a lot quicker, but you need defense and goaltending to win championships. And as you said, you just got to be smart and be patient about it. And I don't believe or subscribe to the theory of, well, just take a goaltender every year. Hey, when there's special talents out there, and if you can get them a little later, great. But if there's a first-round talent, you got an opportunity. And back in Toronto, we made the mistake of trading him, but there was never any doubt when we drafted Rask that we thought he was going to be a hell of a goaltender.
Right.
We just underestimated how much Andrew Raycroft would fade under the pressure of the Toronto Lights. But when you have a guy like that and a talent like that, I would never, ever have an issue with drafting him in the first round.
When we come back in hour two, we're going to hear from Ridly Gregg, who had a goal and an assist last night in the 5-2 victory for Canada to open up the World Juniors against Latvia. Another look at your traffic. And back with hour two, Lee Versace, Sean Simpson, and Big Red Cam here with you on a Thursday morning on TSN Mornings on TSN 1200.